listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the show today. LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy by serving with your gifts and talents. And I'm super excited today to have a guest, Dr. Glenn Tobey, who is a major dude in my book, and I'm excited to have him here. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kellen, for having me. Glad to be here.
You are just so welcome. So I'm not going to give a bio intro, and I'm going to let that unfold as we go. And I'm going to do it first with a question, and that is, I'm going to ask you to go against, just for a minute, your normal tendency to be super modest and self-effacing. And I'm going to ask you to tell me and our audience, how is Dr. Glenn adding good to the world?
Well, I think how I'm adding good to the world is by sharing my life experiences. And as I present them, they redevelop purpose, not just purpose for the audience that I'm speaking to, but also for myself. One of those main areas that I think I'm doing the most work in is the Bookbank Foundation, which is a not-for-profit charity that we've had for over 28 years, going on 30. Where we deal with literacy, we serve the lost, the lonely, and the forgotten, using critical thinking methods, amazing platforms to attract people to destroy the disease of ignorance and help people learn and live better.
I love the Book Bank name and the mission that you have. So I know there's a lot more ways than that because I know you, and we'll explore them as we go. But I want to ask you, before I get to the stuff that I'm seeing on the wall behind you, I want to ask you, what is it in your heart that made you say, I want to destroy the disease of ignorance? Why is that near to your heart?
I experienced youth homelessness when I was 8 years old, born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens, traveled places in between. And during the most difficult times of my life, a lot of it was economic. There were economic issues, or there were ignorance from other people more so. You know, I was raised in a loving household. My father wasn't present, but my mother, my grandmother, my brother Randall, and I, and my mother became ill, and we were homeless. And during this time, we met people who were full of grace, people who were full of God, and people who were full of goodwill. And I saw the difference between how they treated us and always how we were taught to treat them. And I think what it did was it opened a space for me to realize that the best way to win was to educate yourself, stay modest, and kind of deflect or object only when extremely necessary to avoid the negatives and to transfer through the pain, taking some of these elements, you know, I mean, some of the losses turn into great victories at some eventual time in your life. You know, I say that losses are sustained wins or victories if we learn from them.
So it could easily have been the case that hardship in your youth turned you into a negative person, where that was not, you know, you were not interested in serving or blessing, or you could have grown up bitter. And you said you saw this difference and it created a space in your heart. Now, every person has some level of adversity, some a lot, some a little, and they have the same choice. So talk to me a little bit about that choice between blaming, bitterness, and anger, and a choice to be full of grace and be reserved. Talk to me about that choice a little.
Well, I grew up in Queens. Seventh grade, we had stable housing. I went on to go to Queens, and in Queens, South Jamaica, Queens, which was notorious for drug dealing, not so much gangs, crime. It was really the violent 80s, you know, how we were taught in home in terms of on a spiritual level, religious level, emotional level. We understood that there was a better pathway. We thought there were no limits because of reading. In fact, my brother and I would go on reading campaigns. You know, much of the time that we didn't have stable living, we always had access to a library. My mother was always teaching us. We always thrived in school. So education gave us a larger landscape to the universe. We knew the world was bigger than the block we lived on. So we looked at the ups and the downs. We saw people who had succumbed to drug addiction, violence, you know, just people who didn't communicate well and couldn't transverse their conditions to a better world. And modeling much of the behaviors that we saw, maybe not directly in our own neighborhood, we always saw those in our home. I started to put those pieces together and think, hey, I think I started modeling behaviors that would bring me results versus sitting still and living in the dire conditions we were from time to time. Not always, but I think that was the driving force.
I'm going to tattoo that somewhere. Modeling behaviors that bring results. Modeling behaviors that bring results. So this show's about creating your ultimate life, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy, and finding and then modeling behaviors that bring results. Like, hello, that's a wonderful place to start.
Yeah.
So I'm going to switch gears completely. We'll come back and wander all over the place. Right above your head, there's a platinum record on the wall. Tell me about that.
That is a plaque for LL Cool J, which I had the honor of being on his management team with Charles Fisher, Brian Latour, and spent some time with that amazing rapper, actor. And next to that one is Straight Outta Compton, which was Jason Mitchell. It went on to sell 200 million box office tickets and represented him as well. And that was the project right here. I think, I don't know if I point this way, it goes that way, but that is sitting up in my room. That was Whitney Houston's Waiting to Exhale remix that I was a part of. I helped negotiate and put together with Clive Davis and several other executives at Def Jam Records.
Def Jam Records. You don't know this, but I had a little bit to do with them too, but we'll talk about that later. So tell me how you got in the music business. So you went from going on reading excursions with your brother, modeling behaviors that brought good results, and somehow you got into the music business and ended up in those prestigious situations with, you know, huge influence and very successful a project. So tell me a little bit about that journey.
Oh, absolutely. So when I got to seventh grade, I went to junior high school 109, Queens Village. It was a middle school. And then I started fooling around. We did something called pause tapes, where we took two tape recorders, the instrumental is playing, and then we'd hit that. And then I would record my raps over it, just which is like obviously telling stories and poems. I had an amazing story to tell. My rap stories were mostly about happiness and fun and braggadocious things about, hey, what I could do with my wordplay. They weren't gangster rap. They weren't overly competitive. They were more fun. From there, I was a rapper. I called myself Mr. Sweetie G. Had some records that I put out, one called At the Place to Be. Then I became a big promoter in the five boroughs. And that led me in the business of music. And that's how I ended up meeting LL Cool J, Run DMC, and several of the rappers who were in New York City. I was one of the first pioneers in hip hop, especially in Queens, before records were made, rap records were made. It was just an art form at the time and an exercise of expression at the time I got involved.
And it grew from there, and you ended up with a number of awards. And my understanding is recently you've been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Is that true?
Hip Hop Hall of Fame, yeah, in the Bronx. For my contributions to the culture and the music, and I'm really excited about that. Yeah.
So I want you to tell me how that felt, how it feels even to this day, to have participated with the pause tapes and creating the art form to start with before the records were made, and then, you know, seeing it through to those projects, because this has very much to do with modeling the actions that create success, right? And so you kept on doing that, and then you have been now honored in a powerful and important way for that accomplishment. How does that feel?
Pretty amazing. At the time we were doing it, nobody ever would believe that hip-hop and rap music would end up being a multi-billion dollar business. I mean, to know that I was blessed enough to be in, so it, as you know, it started in the Bronx. Hip-hop started in the Bronx. It's the birthplace. We were in Queens, and sometimes people discuss who had the most contributions. Some were discovered, some were undiscovered, but just to be a part of the ecosystem was a miracle. And then looking at these times, you know, I'm in the Bronx, what they call the birthplace. I'm a Queens native, and forever my works will be contributed or considered for the end of time is just amazing. It's overwhelming and daunting.
Well, that's exciting. And I guess if I had to take a point from that, you have a story of, you know, struggle in the beginning. You had support at home and you continued to had the presence of mind to think about what actions make sense, what produce good results, and follow that all the way up to the top of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been blessed that way to be able to participate. And again, I believe in drawing from experiences, not just critical thinking, but critical reading. And the critical application of theory, practice, and I think positioning your concepts, your thoughts, and what you're doing. Got to be critical, got to be reflective. I think it's most effective. And that was a little rhyme I had to drop on you, but it is good theory.
I was just going to say, gee, there's the rapper coming out. Got to be critical, got to be reflective, got to be effective. Loving it. All right. So I'll remember that. So you, after that, you got into sports and other things. Talk a little bit more about it, because you're not a quote one hit wonder, meaning one area. You have multiple multi-talented stuff. So tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, at one time I discovered a rapper by the name of David Banner. We were trying to break his career, who went on to be an amazing actor, producer, songwriter. And I met a gentleman by the name of Alonzo Shavers, and he was a new sports agent. And he came to me for investment and collaboration. And my concept was to take the speed, the creativity, and the culture of music and put it together with the structure, the power, and the discipline of the sports industry. From there, we started a sports agency. We did really well, over $300 million in business for contracts and marketing. Ended up selling that company, but that's how I got into the sports business, because all athletes want to be entertainers. All entertainers want to be athletes for the most part.
I didn't know that. I wouldn't have thought that. So that's how you got it. How long did you run the sports business?
We ran it for about 7 years. We were at the peak of excellence for about, it's out of those 4 years, about 4 years. I was on ESPN. We had notable acknowledgement, not just in our earnings and the players that we represented and produced, but also critical acclaim through the media and through the culture as well, sports entertainment as well.
Tell me one or two examples of sports players that wanted to be entertainers that you had something to do with. I'm busy with that connection in my head that you just made for me.
Well, one of my favorite and first NFL players was Damian Robinson, number 22. From Tampa Bay, traded over, came into the New York Jets, and he's a rapper and an artist at heart. And every step of his career, he was always involved in recording and making records. And every rapper that I know, they're sports fans. ESPN is always in the recording studio, whether it's hip-hop, R&B, soul, country, whatever it is. Most athletes and most artists always come together for charity offerings, whether it's MTV, whether it's All-Star Game, and it's just a place where culture converges. They're playing the best of music. When you're watching sports, even at halftime shows, it's a part of the culture. And then, right, of course, it's competitive, whether they're battling or whether they're competing for chart positions using strategy and marketing, how they market themselves, how they present themselves with rehearsing and preparation. They're completely and divinely attached.
Well, that's a fabulous connection that you've made. It is competitive, and it is about marketing and positioning yourself both to get good contracts as a sports player and to get good contracts and exposure as a musician. Teach me something else, or teach our audience something else about that connection that that is exciting and has kept you involved.
I think what's been exciting about sports and music, I always talk about the art form. Art has always been reflective of society. If you go back to the Roman Empire, people would have comedians, they'd be juggling, telling jokes, you know, or sometimes just playing music. And also oftentimes it was the ethos of what was happening politically, socially, or spiritually for the people. That goes from then all the way back to Greek times, whether it was theater and into Africa, where it was dance and it was spiritual expressions of what's happening in society. Music is truly a direct calling from that very fabric. If you look at the blueprint of it, the writers are writing, the music, the song, the emotions, the arrangement are all expressive of human nature. If you look at sports, the competitiveness, whether it's planning, strategizing, or the oohs and the ahs from the crowds that are listening and watching on TV. If you look at the victorious competition, if you look at the sidelines, much of the game in sports is played off the field, not on the field. And if you look at how much is attached to that, from merchandise to food to culture that follows it, and it goes into from the living room to every aspect of our world, it goes into news, whether it's talk news, like this number one station, LA Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Or if it's just music that's playing every day and it's an inherent part of the program.
So I love that. And you know what else I really love? I love the wound upness that you demonstrate when you start talking about this. So to me, one of the things about creating your ultimate life is the connection to passion, where we recognize our divine callings, and then we lean into that passionately, like you just demonstrated as you're busy explaining how intimately connected they are.
Yes, they are.
So I just love your passion. If I ask you, what is the driving passion? What sits in Glenn's heart today? We've talked about some history, and we might go back there as we wander around. But what's in your heart today that is your driving purpose? Like if I said, what is Dr. Glenn's purpose right now, day to day? What is that?
Day to day is to bring value. So in my everyday life, I try to outperform what I do, whether it's my consulting clients in the world of business, or whether it's my talent management piece or real estate or my investments as an investor. But I think foremost, I believe that during the greatest trials of my life, that I had to pull myself up or pull myself to the challenge to go through the challenge. Then God pulled me all the way up. God pulled me through it all. And I want to die greater than I lived. I want the expression of my life to represent when I first came in here screaming, when I was first born. I want every step that I make, that not just God in a willing way in the aftertime, but in this life behind, by the work that I've done, by my discoveries, by my failures and successes, that someone will say, what a great way that I left, because my work will be greater than the beginning and the end of my life, and they become one. Just greatness. That's what I'm searching for and praying for, because God has been so good to me.
So there's a whole lot of things to unpack there. People say often, I mean, I'm a coach and I write and I do all kinds of stuff, consulting and so forth. And people say all the time, we have this yearning to grow, to be more. And sometimes we smash it and we settle for mediocrity and become addicted to that sort of nothing. But underneath it, there's this yearning to grow. What do you think causes that incessant yearning that caused you to pull yourself up to a position where God could do the finish work? What is that yearning?
I think there's three elements. Some people don't have the mother I've had, the grandmother, my brother, my family, and the collective family, which are neighbors, people that have been in church, education. I grew up in a great time. Some people don't have the same parenting. They don't have the same teaching. But I think spiritual resonation is the difference. You know, you can read books all day. You can put a bunch of things in the well. But if there's no way to get the water out of the well, you'll starve. The continuity to consciousness is what changes people. No matter what's happening in the environment, no matter what's happening with your neighbor, no matter what the score is in the game, it's how you're playing it, not how you're praying it, just wishing well. You have to be the action of your life.
So I'm gonna just tattoo that on the screen too. It doesn't matter what is going on around you. And so much what we see now is anger and frustration and blaming. And it doesn't matter against what or for what. It's all these externalities. But you just told me that in my own choices and in my own inner self, I get to choose my life experience.
Absolutely. And it goes to everything. You know, people talking about politics all the time, whether you love the president, whether you love the party, whether you love the political position, you should be the head of your own household. I am the president of my house. I rule my nation. And I'm not ruled by nationality. I'm ruled by how I change things. It doesn't matter who the player is. It's based on how you're playing the games. If the rules change, you adjust to the rules. So that's how I look at it. I've elected myself to be the house of my household.
And I love that. And it is so in line with everything that I've written about and believe. And so you're preaching to the choir and you're preaching to that great big crowd behind me, too. Yippee. So, yeah, I did that picture on purpose. A whole stadium full of people came here to welcome Dr. Glenn. So you and it is so true. How do you help people realize who have been addicted to mediocrity or have chosen up to a given point in their life to settle for the easy and obvious, to begin at least, because it's easy to say and difficult to do. How do you help someone begin to make the shift to sovereignty? I'm the president of my house and outside is doing whatever it's doing, but I choose who I am and what I do. How do you help? How does Glenn help somebody begin that transition?
You know, I can't help them. I have to help myself. Self-help is the best way to move other people, being the evidence of the good work or the good calling. You got to be it yourself. You know, when Americans talk today in a very hardship, people say talk about hardship. They talk about failure. Some people say you eat what you kill, survival of the fittest. But we need to be fit enough to survive. So if you end up by yourself and you're not the best person that you need to be, I think by causality, not just by causality alone, but by grace of God, by human conditions, by environment, and by human nature, you're going to have to be able to work with others. You have to be the evidence of excellence. And you can't be more hard on other people than you are yourself, because it all comes full circle. So I try to be the evidence of my work. If I have failures, I try to express what those are, because I'm going to get the merits of my failure. People who overcome failure really, really well are considered champions.
So I just absolutely love that, because I ask, how do you help them? And your answer was, be the product of the product. Be the evidence of your own internal work. And if I could scream that from the rooftops, I would. I guess I do. But that's, you know, that is the ultimate truth, because when you are, as you are sitting here, the evidence of your own effort, people are drawn to you. People say, oh, I want to be near that light. I want to be in the presence of someone who has taken that sovereignty and created with it. And so when you say, fix yourself, be the best you can be the evidence of your own work, the phrase I use is be the product of the product. But, you know,
ooh, like that one.
Be that thing. Well, if you're busy preaching some thing, and if somebody looks at you and you're not the thing, then what you say has no power. And if you're the product of whatever your product is, physical or spiritual or whatever, then the light and the truth is evident and powerful.
100%. Absolutely.
So I want you to turn around. Not, you don't have to turn around. You probably know where all those things are on the wall. Pick another one that we didn't talk about and tell me what that is.
Okay, what do we have here?
What is that one with the red, but right below, right there?
This is a novel called The Asian Power League. It is a book about a guy by the name of Michael Hyung, who is an American-born brother from Asia. And I don't say which country it is. And he eventually goes over one summer after he finishes college. He does really well. He's a brilliant guy. He's in the tech space, and he works at these investment banks and grows to become a very wealthy man. One summer in his younger years, he ends up meeting some beautiful lady that he falls in love with, and they kind of express their gratitude and love for each other in a short period of time. But that person that he fell in love with was the leader of the Asian Power League, which was a notorious gang. Well, he had drank too much sake that night, and they knocked on the door, and one of the leaders found out that it was one of the leader's girlfriends. So his cousin had to come in and swear him in and do a vow to make sure that he would be a part of the gang, and they were going to let it go, and they covered it up. He runs to be president many, many years later. And as he becomes president, the Asian Power League comes back, and they say, this is the greatest leverage buyout in the history of the world. We can finally take America down. People have to figure out, is it Japan? Is it China? Is it Korea? Is it Taiwan? What country am I writing about? And that's all part of the mystery that's here. And then lastly, he has to make a decision, Michael Hyung. Is he going to be a great American and defend democracy and be a good human being? Or is he going to go for the riches, the power, and dethrone America? That's the question. You can find the answer if you buy the book.
I love it. And I was not going to let you tell me the answer. So I asked you before we started if you had written, and you said you showed me that book, and you said you wrote a couple of children's books. Children's books are really special, and they have a dear place in my heart. Tell me about your children's books and why you wrote them.
This one's called Little G Faces the Brooklyn Bully. And it's kind of a narrative through the eyes of a child that expresses just the good elements of life: discipline, respect, love, imagination, education, safety. Listen to your parents. And this isn't a real bully that was a physical person. The bully was the environment. The bully was economics. The bully was philosophy. The bully was theology if you didn't know how to interpret it. You know, people use theology, religion, philosophy, their own personal self-interest to really make things difficult in our world. So through a child's eyes, you saw how this young kid was with his mother and riding on the subways like my brother and I did. And we kind of show a kid all those things. And this is the different races, religions, and different people that little G faced. And as he traveled in New York City, experiencing youth homelessness. Then when he grew up, little G and the Dirty Faced Angels. This is little G and all of his little friends. They're all of different backgrounds. And there's a young lady that has cancer. She's a young child. And this guy, Brian, goes into the church and he goes to talk to the other kids and inspire these other kids. But one of the children steals a cross. It was the biggest cross that was in the church. And he takes it to the little girl that's sick. And then she says, "You can't steal this. This isn't good." He says, "But it's a big cross. It's going to help you. It's God. So I stole it to bring it to you so we could cure the cancer." And the little girl said, "No matter how big it is or how small it is, it's the merits and the tenets of righteousness. We have to respect God. We have to be good people and do what's right always. It's not in the size. It's not in the scale. It's in the presentation of it. We tell it from a child's heart and a child's view."
I love that you did that. And your ability to explain that is really nice. Your articulation is good. And I love it. In our conversation, you've mentioned spirituality, you've mentioned church, you've mentioned God, and those that have watched much of this show know that I had an experience in 2018 when I died and had three conversations with God, so I'm very comfortable with that whole construct. But I want you to share with us, why is your relationship with God, with our Father in heaven, as it were, why is that so important to you? And how does it affect you day to day?
It's amazing you say that we have so much in common. I was shot with a shotgun in 2016 and survived it. Someone came into my home. I escaped it. I was in a coma for intubated coma 2 to 3 times, left out of there. And I've traveled and transversed the earth on a physical plane. In my mind and in my heart, I've moved it on a spiritual level. And you know this, these near-death experiences, they're combined. And we realize that the defining moments of our life are the things we either don't do, haven't done enough of, or are not doing. If we live long enough and we get the proper moments and we can put action to it, we can not just change our heart, we can help change the world. It's the definition of capturing your purpose, finding your purpose. Again, I talk about every failure. What have you learned? Well, how do you change and not become conditioned to conditions? Are you evolving? Are you alive or are you just existing? This is the greatest way, not just in death, but in life. The discoveries in life, not in death. You'll find out later in death, but for sure you know every day when you wake up each morning.
Absolutely. So I love again the fact that you said about changing the world, because we often we go into this learned helplessness place where we have the story of, I'm just one person. What can I do? I can't do jack. You know, I'm helpless. And besides that, I'm too busy and I'm barely surviving. And we live in the story of our own helplessness. And I know, and I know you know, but I want you to talk about it a little bit. You're a divine being. So am I. You have the ability to change the world. And maybe it starts with yourself, and maybe it starts with one person around you, but it doesn't end until you have done the things you said you would do when you came here. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, obviously, we all have goals and dreams and desires. Some of them some people were born into their excellence and they recognized it, or the world recognized them. That could be a coach that found them, like the Winner's Circle, my sports agency. I'm running that with Rakim Vick and several other people that are on the team. This excellence, this pursuit of excellence, this maintaining and retaining the pursuit of excellence is based on changing. And again, we're talking about modeled behaviors, adaptation to things that change, charitable exchange, just the human elements that are demanded. So I look more so in the failure than the successes, because oftentimes most of my success is brought because of a good team or a good system that someone taught me or is developing in failure. Failure is a great way to finish. Those that collect all those failures, guaranteed to win. You just got to sustain them.
I love that you said that. And what you don't know is not number 21, but book number 22 that I'm going to write is titled Failure, The Art and Science of Challenging Boundaries. Yeah. So that's a book that wow. I'm going to write about that very topic. So I'm grateful to hear all that you are doing. I want you to tell me a little bit more about your book project, the one you've been running for almost 30 years. Tell me more about that, what it's doing, how people can get involved, and tell me where to find it. You know, tell me more about that project.
So that's called the Book Bank Foundation. It's a not-for-profit charity. What we do, we provide education models. You know, a lot of people think of the traditional book. Sometimes it's media. Sometimes it's kids learning and conversations, critical thinking sessions. You know, we've maintained an office in Atlanta in Buckhead called the Book Bank Foundation. It's a center where people would come and learn and read and develop and have courses. We also are really proud of our flight school with Dr. John Addison, where we teach kids to actually fly aircraft. We teach them the science and the art of aviation. And of course, we have reading, we have acting. We also are feeding about 3,000 people per week. We've been doing this for over 2 years, and we do something called One Block at a Time, where we go through communities and clean up these communities by getting everybody to participate that lives there. You know, everyone comes in, and it's hundreds, if not thousands of people. We do it all year long. And at the end of the year, we do something called the most, and it's so dear to me because I get to go back to the city of New York, you know, and it's called Shelter from the Streets. And that was because when I first started this thing 20 years ago, I used to go around on my own giving things out to the homeless. Now we get buses, we get on those buses, we give them clothes, oftentimes medicine, food, words of inspiration, going in the tunnels, under the bridges and giving away, you know, items of need, whether it's hygiene or whether it's just basic coats and clothes for people. That's been exciting for us. And we're open 24 hours, 7 days a week. A lot of it is communication. And we really pride ourselves in being a director to send you for resources. We're not here to fix all your problems. You know, we can talk to you about the spirit of lack. We can guide you to resources. And that's where we're really good. We're good at speaking in to the spaces where there's a gap.
So I heard it's not just books, boy, teaching people to fly planes and all kinds of other things. So it's expanding and expanding. And then there's the boots on the ground, buses walking around, finding the people that are struggling, that are broken at that moment, and either giving or pointing in the right direction where they can go again, not from a place of learned helplessness, but from a place of empowerment and taking ownership of the situation and doing something to the extent they can, because you pointed, encouraged, and loved them at that moment. So I want you to, 100%. Well, you know what? I know this, and I know you know it, but I'm saying it for the benefit of the listeners, and then you'll say whatever you want to afterwards. So often, you talk about your mother and your grandmother, just the feeling that you're loved and that you flipping matter is energy and fuel. Yeah. Of the highest caliber.
It was for me. It was everything. You know, the nurturing, the learned trust, the ability to emote and exchange love. Some people that are hugged, they can relate to inanimate objects, cars, houses, awards, more than humanity and people. But my parents poured into me. My mother, my grandmother, my brother and I would resonate. Critical thinking, learning and discovery. And education, it's everything. It just opens the mind and it continues to grow.
So I want you to tell me and all of our listeners how to find your charitable foundation. If they want to get involved, either in your block at a time or to donate or to participate in some way, where do we find that so that we can help spread the message and the good stuff that you're doing?
Absolutely. It is online. It is the BBF for Book Bank Foundation .org, the BBF.org, and the BBF.org everywhere on social. The Book Bank Foundation. If you Google it, you'll find it. Headquarters in Atlanta, but we have chapters across the country.
I am just absolutely in awe and grateful for all that you're doing. When I asked you in the beginning, start with, tell me how you're adding good to the world. And you mentioned the Book Bank Foundation. But of course, I and the others listening had no idea the scope and the scale of what that is, what that represents to you and why it is so powerful and near and dear to your heart. Tell me what this year is bringing for you. Like, you have this going on. What's happening in 25?
This year, we're doing really well with a sports agency. It's called the Winner's Circle. We're representing college athletes doing NIL, name, image, and likeness, as well as negotiating on-field contracts in all sports, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, wherever it is, soccer and track. Some amazing people. You can find that on my Instagram, some of the things I'm doing, which are Glenn Toby, G-L-E-N-N, two N's, T-O-B-Y, on all things social. And of course, as my brother in radio, sir, the Global Dance Party, 8 o'clock, streaming live around the world. The Global Dance Party. If you Google it, you'll find it everywhere. It's on every streaming platform. And that's 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific Coast every single Saturday night. The best in dance, R&B, house, hip-hop, soul, and classics.
It sounds like you've said that a time or two. The best of dance, hip-hop, house, soul, and classic. And I said it wrong, but hey. 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Saturday night. Global Dance Party?
You got it, brother.
Global Dance Party. Well, there's all kinds of ways to find you and all kinds of things that are growing in 2025 for you. Now we're going to switch back to some other stuff. Tell me about your brother. Where's he?
My brother, Randall. I have two brothers, and I want to say hello to them, Jamal and Randall. Randall grew up with me in my early years and was my playmate and my big brother, and we got through those difficult, challenging times. And then my younger brother came many years later, joy of both of our lives, and I have a sister named Judy, and I have another sister who is in South Carolina named Denise. So I am just in thriving and enjoying life, and not just preserving and loving my family. I have a daughter named Alexa, and my mother's still thriving and alive, but it's also the community of family, too, that I'm affecting on a global and local level. I have so many family members that are not related to me, and I love them equally.
I love that you said that, because we're all family of the same God. And so we're all actually, we say that, you know, brothers and sisters, but a lot of people don't act like that. So I'm loving that you love your family and that you acknowledge them and that you have that kind of relationship with them. So I want to ask you about something different. So you live in Atlanta now, is that right?
Yes, I'm in Atlanta. Most of the time when I'm not in a suitcase.
When you're not in a suitcase. So when you're traveling, and I know you're doing a lot with the sports, the Winner's Circle, the sports agency, do you travel for other reasons? Like, do you go speak at events and participate in that kind of thing? Tell me a little bit about that.
Do a lot of speaking. I do public speaking, and I'm actually working with Israel Durand. He and I have hooked up to do some motivational speaking courses, and I'm working on a TED Talk, and I love to speak. I love to speak. I speak more from the heart than with a traditional way. That's most of my speeches have been from the heart and from experience.
I love that. So people can find, do you have a YouTube channel where people can see some of the speeches you've given?
I do. Everything's Glenn Toby, G-L-E-N-N-T-O-B-Y. Kellen, don't forget the movie Courage to Thrive with our dear friend.
Kameen Bell-Samuel. So tell me your relationship to that movie.
Executive producer on that film, and I've been managing her film career. She goes out as a co-director, a writer, and a producer. And it's an amazing story about thriving with through the challenges of our life, having the courage to hear your voice heard. And it's about these amazing women that are impacting the world. And it tells a story from their eyes and their heart and their seat, how they see the world and how they've made the difference. And I'm honored to be a man that's attached to that project.
So I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you about it. And what I want to emphasize here is you've got a successful agency, the Winner's Circle, and you're using that position, that prominence, to do so many projects. Like, what made you decide, I want to be executive producer of this movie put on by this, and I happen to know Kameen, and I'm going to take that and I'm going to do something with it because it's about helping people thrive and telling the stories of people who have the courage to thrive. What makes you decide that's what I also want to do?
Well, I've had the honor of meeting up with a dear friend of mine, Dan Vega. Dan introduced me to Kameen, her husband, Mark. We just talked spiritually. We resonated. It was like a bunch of seeds in a magic garden, and we saw the fruit of the project. It was natural. I've had a tremendous amount of experience in entertainment, film, television, music. It was a natural fit. She's an amazing human being, and it just worked. And it's an impactful film that's going to be released in the later part of the year, coming your way. You want to see it. It's a human interest story. It is motivating. It is educating. And it's everything you can imagine.
Courage to Thrive is the name of that, and it will be coming out. So I'm going to open this now because I've been going down different avenues that I know about you or that you've mentioned. I want you to go down an avenue I haven't done yet. Pick a topic that we haven't talked about, whether it's family, whether it's spiritual, whether it is adding good to the world, that it matters to you and you would love to leave on people's hearts right now.
I think what's most, what I enjoy most now is philanthropy and philosophy. Like this is philosophical, it's spiritual, it's part of the philanthropy, but it's guided and driven by RCP Capital, where I'm a managing partner. It's a biotech firm in Boston with Michael and Christina. They're my partners. And we are developing solutions through medicine, through technology, and through science to heal and help people live longer and live better and live stronger. So earning money in that part of my business as an entrepreneur is important. It's the driving force that allows me to have the freedom to impact people's lives. Like you said, it's speaking at universities or at masterminds and giving out information, or these creative projects, which I think are the life of me as a creative. I love storytelling. I love providing information, creating blueprints, coming up with recipes for success. That's something I really enjoy, and I do it on a daily basis.
I love that, because I know you do business consulting and coming up with recipes for success to overcome challenges or barriers, whether they're mental or, and most of them are mental and spiritual, as opposed to actually in the world, because there's always a way to do something if we believe we can find it. So tell me what the most important guiding principle or principles, I'm not going to make you pick the most. Tell me the important guiding principles, because as you do all these things, you do your sports thing, you do this health thing, biotech thing, you've got movies, you've got books, you've got another book you said you were working on, you had a big impact on music, and that was recognized. What are the guiding principles that get you up in the morning and keep you moving through the day?
I think what drives me is, you know, my grandmother's no longer with me, but my mother's here, and I'm here by the prayers of ancestors and other people that made sacrifices that knew me and didn't know me. So I'm trying to outperform myself. You know, when I was young, I used to run for success as though a dog was chasing me. Then it changed and I ran to success because I became successful. I had businesses and I was able to connect people. Then I ran through success. And then when I came on the other side, I realized all of that good work, when it ends, it should perpetually continue to recycle itself through other people, through other experiences and other things that we create. So every day I get up to try to add to what I've done. So I've done more good in this world than bad, that I've mattered to somebody, inspired somebody else, given them the air that God put in my lungs when he breathed into me. And when the world allowed me to sit here, and gave me a space. People that prayed for me, had patience for me and understanding, I'm trying to just give it all back where it came from. when you do that, it never stops. Never.
I love that. And I love the fact that you said recycle. You keep going. And people sometimes think of that as legacy. And they view it as some kind of an ego thing where you're wearing a badge of coolness. And the truth is, when you're gone, you're gone. And the real fulfillment of our purpose as divine beings on earth is to create ways to continue to lift and bless people perpetually.
Perpetually. Yeah. Imagine if you don't. Those people that... A lot of people are takers, and a lot of people don't think about it. But if you stop giving, the chain stops moving. People think of it as themselves, by DNA, as family. Spiritually and human, we are one family. We have to pour into it, or there'll be nothing to drink from the fountain.
Can't drink from an empty well, and so I love that. Can you tell me what you do in the morning? Because someone that creates the kind of energy and momentum and power that you create to run these different enterprises and move forward, how do you prepare yourself? Because, you know, we essentially die every night and are born again every morning, right? So how do you prepare yourself in the morning to be the very best Glenn today, to outperform yesterday?
I kind of approach it in a singular fashion. A lot of executives and leaders, they're wide open. You know, they're looking at whether it's the finance team, the sales team, bills being paid, new business, closing deals, showing up for where they're supposed to show up. And it's so wide. They wake right up, look at their phone, and they're attacking a million things. For me, it's a singular approach. I go directly to the core of my soul, to my mind, my heart, see where I am. How am I projecting? What kind of energy? Is it kind of demure? Is it a little off? Is it on? Do I need to work out first? Do I need to pray first? Should I skip it and push appointments to the afternoon? So I kind of deal with me first to try to present the best me I can. And then if I'm coming up short, that's why you have to have a team. Some things you defer, some things you relegate to others. And it's the oneness of self in order to unify with others. And most people try to unify with everybody else without checking self. And it sometimes doesn't work because you're not bringing who you think you're bringing to the table.
Thank you for saying that. I couldn't agree more. It is, to me, the most important thing you can do. And this is true, and I'm going to ask you, but I'll bet it's true with your clients too. The thing that gets in the way of our success most of all is we didn't bring our best selves to the decision, to the negotiation, to the conversation, to the creative effort, to the game, to whatever it is. And so you said, my focus is I'm going to be the best me I can create today. Does that ring true for you across all of your clients and all of your work about being the best you first?
I mean, it resonates with me because I've always looked at me. I don't lose well, but I've always been able to look in the mirror. Consciousness hasn't been a problem. It's when I'm unconscious is when I'm not being conscious of something. We don't have the continuity, consciousness versus unconsciousness. You get complete homeostasis when all of those things, the mind, the body, the soul, and the spirit meet. Oftentimes they don't. And even when they're in place, if you can't go in, and again, we talked about drawing from the well, drawing from the wellness, drawing from the wealth, and drawing from the reason and purpose. So I think it's always looking at those shortcomings, accountability, and trying to do better. I know people that just flow through life because the measure of success is based on money, victory, or how well they defeat the person that they've, or the challenge they've overcome. It's never that. Everything's my fault. I'm writing the book of my life. God is the one that binds it. It's my story to tell, whether I go to heaven or go to hell. So I just rang the bell. There you go, Cal.
Yeah. All right. And we'll just be done with that fabulous rhyme. Dr. Glenn, I want to delightfully and gratefully thank you for sharing your wisdom, your heart, your soul, your love, and the truth of who you're being with us today.
Thank you, brother, for bringing me on the number one show, not just because we're in California here, not just because it's LA Talk Radio, because the streaming and because of the replays on social, this is where it is. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
You are welcome. You guys, I want you to listen to this again. I want you to take it into your heart. Glenn is a model of that kind of success, choosing to be the best person he can be every day because he can, preparing himself every morning. I love that. And if you've watched much of the show, you know that's what I do also. And I love that because we are the sovereign creator of our lives, and nothing is beyond your ability. Nothing is beyond your reach. You can create and have any kind of life you want. So why would you settle for anything less than your ultimate life?
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.